The following is a RockRadioShow.com exclusive.
Reviews right here on WildTalkRadio.com. He's Rock, I'm Lindsay, and we're back, and I'm excited for this, guys, because I have waited literal years for this, and this is the Brothers of Destruction, the sit-down chit-chat between The Undertaker and Kane about their historic rivalry that has spanned 23 years, and why was this only 46 minutes?
Yeah, let's get that out of the way. Let's talk about the negative. It was 46 minutes.
I mean, it was a wonderful 46 minutes. Okay?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Fantastic 46 minutes.
But my one, and I understand why it was cut like this, was it was cut for a film festival, and it's short for a film festival. I completely respect that, okay? But for the network version that got released, why did you only release 46 minutes of this? Because, oh my God, you can tell they cut so much out of this. I desperately want to see the uncut sit down. Desperately want to see it, because oh my God, you know there's so much good stuff in there that's just sitting on the cutting room floor right now and we'll never get to see it.
Because they jumped from a 2002 era to 2010 and they were done.
Yeah, they kind of talked about, like, the streak, and that was sort of it. Like, it was cool that you got, like, the history of the two characters, and that's really where they talked about is mainly, like, it focused on, like, where Kane came about and how Glenn Jacobs sort of intersected into Mark Calloway's life and how, like, Mark and Pallbearer kind of sort of came up with this idea for the brother with, I believe, Bruce Pritchard, and sort of they, or Michael Hayes, I forget which one they said, but like basically this was a group effort to create Kane. And originally Kane was supposed to be a one-off. They needed somebody for The Undertaker, and so they're like, well, we have this Glenn Jacobs guy. Which, by the way, I love how they talked about how crappy the Isaac Yankum DDS character was.
So first they go back to them fighting in Smoky Mountain when it was Unabomb. Was it Unabomb or Unabomber? Whatever it was.
Is Unabomb.
Unabomb. They go back to that, and they talked about their first interactions then, and he's like, all right, I got something here. And then he gets called up, and then they call him Isaac Yankum, DDS, the wrestling dentist, because Bobby Heenan always wanted a wrestling dentist, and that's why they came up with the wrestling dentist, Isaac Yankum, DDS, you know, after Bobby Heenan left the company.
You know. So like you do.
They didn't mention that fact, but it was like, I go, in my head, I was like, all right, the time period, 94, yeah, he just went to WCW. Hey, let's use his idea of the wrestling dentist.
I love the setup for that, too, because Taker was like, did you tell him you went to, like, dental school or some crap like that? Like, how did you even get that?
Because he brings up everyone, if you say something to Vince, if you just, like, you know, make something him aware or something, he's going to pick up on it and go, ha, this is what you are now.
Right?
Because Taker mentioned something.
Taker mentioned that when he went up to Vince's house for the interview, that he jokingly said that he can sing in the shower.
Yeah.
Or he sings in the shower or something to that effect. And then Taker was like, oh, crap, I shouldn't have said that. And like, he's like, I tried to pull it back. And then they started the question, well, what do you sing in the shower? And Taker's like, no, I don't. I can't sing. No, please don't make me.
So I have to ask you this. What songs do you think he sings in the shower?
Metallica or some kind of like George Strait.
Okay.
Those are, I actually think it's probably more George Strait than anything else, but I'm sure it's something. If he sings in the shower, I don't think he sings in the shower.
I bet he does.
He might talk to himself in the shower.
I mean, that doesn't everyone just talk to themselves in the shower?
I do that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
I think out loud. I call it thinking out loud in the shower.
Yeah. It's totally common. We all do it.
So, yeah. But I don't know if he sings. I mean, he might put like music on and he might listen to music and maybe he sings along with the music. I don't know. But, you know.
Imagine if he's, you know, he's out there belting out Britney Spears songs in the shower.
That would be amazing.
Or Christina Aguilera songs. Yes, doing 90s girl band girl names. Yes.
Backstreet Boys.
Backstreet Boys.
NSYNC.
You know. 98 Degrees.
God, who remembers them? Good Lord.
Well, when you say Backstreet Boys and NSYNC, then you go, that's how you...
But 98 Degrees was like the bastard love child it of was. NSYNC and the Backstreet Boys. Like, 98 Degrees was like, no offense to them, but it was just like, they were the third coming of like the boy band craze at that point. And it's like, we're going to slap this together at this point because the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC had just taken off. And so they're like, we're going to start throwing boy bands together. And that was 98 Degrees.
Right, but at least, you know, someone famous came out of it, Nick Lachey, and, you know.
We got Nick Lachey, yeah.
So, you know.
But, yeah, I don't know. Anyway, back to...
Tangent.
So, yeah, so it gets revealed also that Taker kind of went to Vince about it and was like, so this is stupid. Why are you doing this to him? He's so much better than this. And then what I loved, and this is my other kind of complaint about this, because one of the things that I really wanted to see with this that we kind of got to see but didn't get to see was the, I'm going to call it, warm friendship that they have for each other. These two are really, really, really close friends, and I really wanted to see that between the two, and of the two of them just sitting there chit-chatting and having a good time. And there were parts of that, but this was much more of a formal sit-down, sort of almost quasi-scripted kind of interview, which you would figure, because it is for a film festival, so it's like they're gonna have it be a little bit more tightened, but I want it kind of like more loose. Like, they're just sitting there, they're chit-chatting, they're shooting shit, they're going back and forth, they're telling stories, because I love how, like, they open it up, and Taker sits down, and he's like, what are we doing now? He's like, we're telling stories, is that what we're doing? Glenn's like, I think so, I don't know. It's like, wait, what would the conversation have been about if it wasn't stories? I just need to know. There's like so many things I just need to know based out of this. But I also like Glenn shows up very professional, you know, looking good in his blazer and his jeans and his shirt.
Oh, he sits there, you're going there, aren't you?
I'm going there. The whole time, right? He's very formal the whole time. He's very properly sitting in his chair. The Undertaker start in his chair, sitting like a normal person. And eventually, his feet are almost touching Glenn. Like, he just stretches out and gets comfy. Why did nobody go get that man an ottoman? Because clearly he wanted one. Because he's just literally, he has his legs fully stretched out. He's slouched down in his chair. He's comfortable. He's relaxing. It's just, yeah. And he's in what I would term his interview outfit, because he's in that nine-line shirt, the jeans, the boots, the cowboy boots, and the baseball hat with what I swear to God was a braid stapled to the back of the hat.
It was real hair.
It's so small. It's like wait, is that his real hair? Like, I don't mean that in a negative way. Like, no offense to him. It was so long. And maybe I didn't realize his hair had gotten that long, because it's like back down to like maybe the mid part of his back or past his shoulders to the like almost to his like shoulder blades type area. Like, that thing was long, man.
Oh, it was a long piece of hair, yeah.
So it's like, oh, okay, all right. It looked weird because it didn't move like normal braids move, if that makes any sense.
It makes sense.
Like, it wasn't distracting to the point that you didn't pay attention to the interview thing, but it was like you're just sitting there and every once in a while he would move his head and you would see it and you're like, wait. And also the whole no sideburns thing. Like, he had no sideburns. You can tell he got cleaned up for this. Beard was all trimmed and dyed. There were no sideburns that he had to worry about. And that's where my theory of they just put the braid in the hat kind of thing comes from, is the fact that you could not see any of his other natural hair anywhere on him except his face, like his beard and his eyebrows. What eyebrows he has left. 'Cause fire. But, you know, it's just, it's the little things that you notice with that. But I think the one thing I really wanted to hear more about that we didn't get was the Inferno matches and how that kind of came about. Because there are two very different reactions to this. There's Glenn Jacobs, who just came in the company. And he's like, yeah, let's do the thing. And he's all excited. And Mark's like, we're going to do what now? You're going to make me do what now? So I now affectionately call the Inferno match the Undertaker's Not So Good, Very Bad Day, because he just really did not want to do that crap at all. You can tell he just really did not want to do that crap. And I think they cut that whole part out. of him bitching about it.
So there was I believe there was supposed to be a walkthrough that they were unable to do because I think Kane and Paul had a house show.
Well, what happened is, and I've heard the story before, is that Kane and Paul had a house show, and so they sent them up in a limo to the house show, and then the limo driver was supposed to bring them back to the rehearsals for the pay-per-view. Well, the limo driver got lost on the way either to the house show or the pay-per-view. I think it was to the pay-per-view building. He went to the wrong city. And so they ended up getting there like really, really, really late or really early in the morning, depending on who's telling the story. And so they did not get to rehearse the Inferno match. So they never lit it up.
Until night of. And well, you know.
Which is probably a really smart thing, because I'm fairly sure if they had lit it up the night before and make Mark Calloway get in that ring the night before, that match never would have happened, because he just would have noped that shit so hard. Because he was like, you can tell he does not like that match. He hates that match. You can tell. Because he hasn't done a lot of them. They generally make Kane do it more than they make The Undertaker. I think Taker's done two of them. Because he's done two of them with Kane. Because he did the first one and then he did the Ministry one. And I think those were the two times they got him to do it, and that was it. Is that right?
I'm Googling.
Okay. Because I know Kane's done two with Taker. He did one with Bray Wyatt.
One with MVP.
One with MVP.
One with Hunter.
That's right, one with Hunter.
That's it.
So Taker's only done the two.
Yeah, according to a WWE.com article from 2013.
He got The Undertaker to do it twice. That was it. And I want to know how they convinced him to do the second one. I need to know how that happened, because you could tell he didn't want to do the first one. He wasn't a fan of it, because he talked about how hot it was, how difficult it was to breathe, how like all the air would get sucked out of the ring whenever they would hit the like really big boost. And then he's like, on top of it, we're fully clothed, we have long hair, there's stuff hanging off everywhere, you know, there's way too much danger here, but they did it anyway and they persevered. But yeah, Mark Calloway is not so good. Very bad day, the Inferno match. One and two. But yeah, I like this. I'm trying to think if there's any other stories that they really shared, because I think there was the one where Kane lit the coffin on fire.
Oh, and how the fire department did not like that.
Got pissed off at him because flames were a little bigger than they were in rehearsal. A
little bit. But I like how they went through all that. I like how they went through that, how they went through how Mark overshadowed Kane's first world title win. How Mick did, mainly.
Yeah, Mick did.
Yeah.
I also liked how like, when they were, because they actually talked about how the whole feud between them came about, like the original feud, and they talked about how, you know, they dug up the Undertaker's mama and then left him laying in his mama's casket, and Glenn kind of giving Mark crap about that.
That was good, yeah.
You're like, yeah, you left me laying in my mother's casket. Thanks for that, by the way. I hate you. And then there was like one point where like Mark or like Glenn was supposed to hit. I keep going back and forth between Mark and Taker. I don't know which to call him. I think we can safely call him Mark at this point. Is that okay with everybody if we just call him Mark? Where Mark, like Glenn was supposed to slap Mark, but he didn't want to do it out of respect. Because he's like, I can't slap the Undertaker. I can't do that. I have too much respect for him. So what did Mark do? Mark slapped the shit out of Glenn. And after that, it was like, oh, it's on.
Game on,
it's
yeah.
On! And then, you know, they talked. And I wish they had talked more about the feud that they did in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, the only comments that were made on that was Mark was like, you kicked the shit out of me for three straight matches. And Glenn was like, I know, wasn't that great?
It helped to rebuild Kane.
They had to rebuild Kane, yeah. But, and then they talked about the streak, which, and this is the one thing from this that kind of made the headlines, was this particular part of it. I wish they would stop asking Mark Calloway about WrestleMania 30. He doesn't remember it. Leave him alone, okay? He doesn't remember it. Just back off.
And how they both then agreed that it should be Roman.
Roman Reigns. Yeah, basically Mark set it up as when he got to the building that day, what he remembers is he got to the building that day and he was going over, and then he changed, and then Vince changed it, and Mark was like, well, I don't think Brock really needs it, but if that's what you want to do, that's what we're going to do, right? Because it's Vince's show. And Mark's like, I'm going to do whatever you want me to do, because he's that kind of individual. And so he put Brock over, but yeah, they were both like, it should have been Roman. But what I found interesting was Glenn was like, yeah, I left the room. I got so mad, I just got up and walked out.
Yeah, he was very upset. We all were.
Well, and he was like, I thought that they had, like, botched the finish or something had happened because, and you're waiting for them to restart it and they're not restarting it. And he's like, yeah, I got so mad, I got up and walked out of the room. I was like, aw. My heart. But I will say, overall, this is really, really good. This is really enjoyable. I like how they set this up. I would love to see more, either from this, where they take the stuff that they cut out and they make a full network special out of it, where they air the full unedited or minorly edited interview. You know, you take all the stuff out that
you can't, you know,
we're not supposed to see.
Yeah.
Which is probably them going off on tangents and them, the crew yelling at them, all right, bring it back, bring it back. Come on, bring it back. Or I would love to see like a part two where they're just in somebody's living room with like coffee and snacks and they're just chilling.
Yeah, I want to go through more of the history. I did like how they went through the history of them, of Taker, you know, transforming into Mark Bennett, and how they kind of liked that version of the Brothers of Destruction the best, where it's like, yeah, we're cool here. We're dominating. But they realized they couldn't dominate for long because it's Taker and Kane. Who can they book them against?
Yeah, they're so overpowering that they just kind of ran through everybody. And at some point, you just have to split that apart. But you, I think they always enjoyed working together. And they talked about especially them coming together for the first time as a tag team and how like epic that was. Because eventually, at some point, they have to come together and how everybody was super into that.
Yeah, and something WWE does a lot lately is they skip over like a certain period of time in the company. I don't know why, but they do, like the mid-2000s or the late-2000s. They kind of skip over it when it comes to documentaries and stuff. It's like, there's some stuff that actually went really good, like the Kane and Taker stuff through those years. There's a lot of good stuff that came out of it, and it should get more of a focus. I was hoping they would talk more about it, but they didn't.
Well, at least for Kane and Taker, I think the issue is the two times that I remember, which was 2001 and 2002, three, somewhere in there, right before Taker went back to being the Dead Man Undertaker, both of them feature Taker's second wife.
Right, but that's 2003. I'm talking about like 5, 6, 7 era.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's stories. There's a lot of story to tell, and they completely moved past it, and that's sad, but what
can
you do?
Yeah, I'm surprised that they just kind of cut that out.
That said, the whole thing was great. It was enjoyable. Again, the only real complaint is more story, longer.
Yeah, I would, like I keep saying, I would love to see more of this, or I would love to see another one with them where they sit down and they talk. And I would almost, if you're going to do that kind of like interview style, I would love to see the two of them sit down with Austin, or if you can get Renee Young to do it, have Renee Young sit down with them, or have a professional interviewer sit down with the two of them and actually lead a conversation with the two of them.
Put Cole in the middle of them and it'll be fine.
Yeah, Cole or like Graves or
someone to moderate the conversation so they don't have to.
Yeah, and just let them talk and let them kind of, and just sort of bring them up and lead them as you need to, but let them ultimately talk and share stories. Because I think that was the one like really awkward thing, was just like the formality of it, like I said, because it's like you can tell they were a little awkward about being formal with each other because they're not formal with each other. Mm-hmm. And like I said, you didn't really get to see the real friendship between the two of them until the very, very end. Like at the very beginning, they're like, oh my God, hi, and they hug.
Then we got ultra serious, and then, yeah.
And then they smack the microphones and they're like, they'll take it out and post, it's fine. And they were joking and kidding with each other, because I think that's their like actual relationship, is they just like tease each other and joke and kid with each other. But it's like you can tell that there's a very, very strong friendship between the two, just because Taker, I think, likes Glenn enormously. And I think the feeling is mutual.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. Because it was really sweet at the end how, I think it was Glenn who said it, that there are just people that come into your life that are meant to change it and are meant to intersect and that kind of thing. And he said that for him, that was Taker. Like, Taker changed his life for the better.
Mm-hmm.
And Taker was like, ditto, basically. So it was really sweet that at the end you got to see that, but I would have loved to see like more of that throughout. Just because it's like we kind of got the tease in the Last Ride documentary of how they are with each other.
Yeah.
And that's what I was really hoping they would be like in this.
But you understood why it was the way it was.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying it was bad at all. I'm just saying I had an expectation. It wasn't the expectation, but I'm fine with the result. I just want more. And I think that's that's awesome that this left you with wanting more, because if they do want to go back and use more of the footage, or they want to do a second one with them, maybe like a year from now, 6 months from now, after the formal retirement, I think you could absolutely do that. And it would be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be great. But what's really interesting is actually what's coming up on the network, which this Sunday,
following Survivor Series, probably posted earlier today, but most likely following Survivor Series.
November 22nd. How about that? Depending on when you listen to this, November 22nd, yes, the Austin interview with Taker, part two, where the two of them sit down, what is it, like a year later from where they did the first one, and Austin does a second interview with The Undertaker. That is dropping on the 22nd, and that is coinciding with The Undertaker's final farewell, sad, at Survivor Series the night of the 22nd. Maybe. We'll see. And we'll see if The Undertaker actually retires. He probably does. Like, they're doing the whole Undertaker month.
Like, yeah, it sounds like it's the finale.
And he's getting the full big shebang send-off, as he should. And I have to say, I love all the content that we've gotten with him, about him. I love that they've, like, actually got documentation of, like, all his, like, a lot of his stories, a lot of his thoughts, where he's at in this current moment. I love that we're able to see all of that, because I think for a lot of other people who've retired prior, we didn't get that. And we never got to see that. We never got to see somebody who is an icon in his field step away, and what that process is like for him.
Yeah.
That's really, really interesting to watch, because you know it's a very, very hard decision. And I think he's gone on record as saying in interviews that the soul is willing. If the soul could do it forever, he absolutely would, but the body just can't do it anymore. And so it's like,
especially to the level that he wants.
Yeah. I think if he could perform at the level he wants, he would absolutely perform forever. But he just can't. And he understands that, you know, now's the time to take a step back for permanently. And what I love is he already kind of has his eye on something else, which we all kind of guessed, or at least I guessed. I know I guessed it. But it's, he kind of wants to go to the Performance Center, and he kind of wants to teach. And I think if he wants to do that, let the man do it.
Oh, yeah.
Let him teach. Because you can tell that's what he really loves to do.
Yeah.
And he really loves to give back, and it's a good way to keep him involved in the industry. It's a good way to keep him involved with the boys and the girls and, you know, have him be relevant. But he's not on that stage anymore, so he can kind of kick back and be a little bit more chill. But yeah, if the man wants to teach, I think Hunter and Sean would be more than happy to have him at the PC.
Oh, yeah. They all will.
In any way that they can get him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if he moves or not, I don't know.
That's on him.
That's on him if he decides he wants to move. But there's also Zoom. Zoom is a thing.
Zoom is indeed a thing in 2020.
Well, I mean, if anybody could teach a class on, like, developing a character and creating a character and putting it out there and then evolving a character and having longevity and all of that, Mr. Calloway's your man.
Oh, yeah.
He knows how to do that. But I think that does it for us. What do you think?
It does. Make sure you check out our Survivor Series preview Thursday night on The Rack, 10 p.m. Eastern. Direct Radio Show on all your favorite social media platforms. It's at Wild Talk Radio on Twitter, Facebook.com/Wild Talk Radio Network.
And you can follow me on most of the social medias at Linz Ward, LNSWRD. So for Rock, I'm Lindsay Ward. You've been listening to the Rack Extra Reviews, the Brothers of Destruction edition, right here on WildTalkRadio.com. And don't worry, we will be back with another review very soon. Till then, bye!